Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome back to Geeking In, your favourite fortnightly fanfest. I am Jay, I'm your party host, so grab your new bourbon, your beer or your brew, half sugar and oat milk, just the way you like it. And fuck knows, this week, this is going to be something bizarre, I think. The amount of issues we've had to go through to try to get together to just record us rambling crap. God knows where this is going to go. But I am joined, as always, by the incredible, the invincible, the infamous, the futurist who seems to have time traveled back to the 90s to dial in from a payphone. How are you doing, T?
Well, that's how I succeed as a futurist. I take my future knowledge back a couple of decades. That's how it all works.
Worked for Biff Tannen.
Man, I've taken the wrong knowledge back, clearly.
You should have taken the real sports almanac,
exactly.
And not the replica sports almanac from the Back to the Future films.
But it's just so much cooler.
Yes, but it's made up. And we are also joined by Mr. Fantastic himself, our flexible Fred, the pajama prince of the pause that was promised. I was panicking because I'm worried that your pause is going to go so long and we're going to lose everything we've got held together by sellotape and blue tack this week. How you doing, B?
I want to wish you a bonus DS. I want to wish you a bonus DS. I want to wish you a bonus DS from the bottom of my heart. I want to wish you a bonus DS. I want to wish you a bonus DS. I want to wish you a bonus DS from the bottom of my heart.
Bonus DS.
It is a serenade Merry Christmas to our Puerto Rican listeners. We continue to find our audiences in new countries. So thank you very much for continuing to rate, review, subscribe and share wherever you are listening to this and getting involved in the conversation at Geeking and Pod on both Instagram and Twitter. And whilst you are there, you'll be able to find the Linktree link in our bios. It takes you to everything we are, including Teesprings, where we sell our mugs, our masks, and our T-shirts. And our T-shirts are printed by Teesprings, as we said. Their customer service is exemplary. They are good at fulfilling every single order placed. And T, why is that an important thing for us?
Because we should get every season of a show to tell the full story.
Because it means that no orders are cancelled. And speaking of cancelled,
7 out of 10.
Oh God! What is this show? What are we doing? I'm brilliant.
Podcast, and I understand why I have explained this to you in the 1996 era that you've dialed in from. Imagine the 90210, but it's, yeah. The news has broken that Cowboy Bebop will not be returning. The crew of the Bebop have had their adventures. It hasn't reached the magical 60% penetration, watch value, or something, whatever the magical 60% figure is that Netflix uses their algorithm as to when anything gets reviewed, and therefore it will not be picked up for a second season. This is the latest in a long line of attempts series that Netflix have used as one and done. Jupiter's Legacy recently came out with a lot of noise and then got cancelled very quickly. And apparently it is all down to this kind of 60% watch figure that they have. And if it doesn't do that within a window, then quite simply it isn't cancelled. The rumours are that Cowboy Bebop hit 59%.
Wow.
That's making it so much worse.
You finally finished watching all of,
yep.
I was going to say season one, but the season of Cowboy Bebop.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling about it not being picked up?
To be honest, it's fair enough. I enjoyed it. I wish there was a season two. I wish we got to see more of the story. It's almost from the perspective, and this is such an old, this is a 90s perspective for you. You know, I'm used to the first three seasons being a bit shit, and then season four through seven being amazing and having that patience with things. But yeah, it was controversial. You know, I could see it just got really, really mixed reviews. People just weren't buying it. You know, for me, one of the things was it was going to drive people to the original show. It was going to also, you know, these things happen. You get merch, you get, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's exciting. So I was envisioning a world where Cowboy Bebop in general is really popular. And, you know, we'd get to see John Cho doing what he's doing so much more. It's a shame, but I can understand it. And sort of, I think that kind of metric is, you know, like I've dealt with Firefly being cancelled because it was all over the place. It was aired out of order. It was in a bad time slot, all this kind of stuff. Cowboy Bebop had everything going for it. It had all the marketing. You know, it was on Netflix. It was launched the way all the other shows are launched. So it got a fair go. It didn't work. It's sort of fair enough. But I'm really sad about it. I wish there was more. I wish we'd somehow get a new season. I wish this would be a random expanse type thing where Bezos would suddenly go, yeah, don't worry, I'll do it on Prime. Or, you know, Paramount or something, trying to launch the new service. But I don't see Bebop getting that big sort of, you know, write-in fan fest pushing behind it. And ultimately, if you haven't got that, fair enough, I guess.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it wasn't a problem-free adaptation in many, many ways. And you know, some of it we've talked about off-air because we hadn't all finished by the time we were talking in the first one. But, you know, I think that they took a lot of the mystique away from Vicious, for instance. I didn't the... Vicious and Julia relationship. I didn't feel that the Julia and Spike relationship was earned. Basically, they danced together once. It was a line dance, and that was enough for them to cheat on his brother and her fiance. So it was a bit messy. And then I didn't like the Lady Macbeth thing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed because I would have liked to see how they kind of, you know, got a little bit more comfortable in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm far more likely to go back and watch the anime than I am the live action.
Yeah, I feel that too, actually. And that's having watched the anime so many times. I'm still likely to watch that again over the live action.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is, you know, this didn't hit well with both fans of the anime and people new coming into it. Because I did have a sense of, you know, if you're looking for the same story beats of the anime, it's not going to be the same, but yeah, lots of new people weren't so into it. And you're right, Vicious and Julia killed it. They could have done without that storyline entirely. Season one could have just been Spike, Jet, and Faye, you know, faffing around, getting to know each other, the team building, that kind of stuff. You know, and then you'd get the mystique and you'd get all of that stuff. They spunked the load of it too early and did it really badly, unfortunately. You know, even that final fight, it didn't do it for me.
B, you're one of those who, and you know, this was going to be your introduction to, how are you feeling about this being cancelled? And also, you were a big fan of Jupiter's Legacy. How are you feeling about that not being picked up for a second season as well?
Oh, I don't know. It's a bit like cancel culture at the moment, isn't it? It looks as if Netflix have got a sort of target figure in mind.
I think that's a different thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cancel culture is different.
Okay. It's cancelled, though, isn't it? Sorry?
Yes, it's
cancel culture is about individuals.
Oh, okay. still.
So Dave Chappelle would be cancel culture, except he's not cancelled.
Ah, okay.
Also available on Netflix. But yes, so sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, so obviously Netflix have got this figure in mind, viewing figures or whatever target they have, which they don't disclose. And obviously if it doesn't hit that mark, see you later. You know, recently in the papers, I think it was just today, they were talking about how much investment there is in television, in terms of movies and TV shows, etc., thanks to people like Netflix and Disney Plus, etc., which, you know, is good in some respects as we get new TV shows. But, you know, people obviously, there's fans of shows that never get to see the full fruition of the story, to be honest, which is such a shame.
It's a weird one, actually, isn't it? Because previously it was also kind of mystical and dark artsy, and it wasn't necessarily a case of, you know, has it got the Nielsen ratings? And the Nielsen ratings were such a weird metric anyway. You know, it was some people happened to have a box in their room and it was just recording that and then multiplying it out or whatever. And it feels like the metrics are smarter now because you literally know how many people are watching and you get to know that, right, you know, everyone watched episode 1 and 2 and then everyone dropped off and no one watched after episode 2 because it was crap. But then, yeah, there is a thing of it not being given a chance. I just think, like, especially with Netflix and how they dropped the whole thing at once, you know, if the show got better, so if, you know, it's a fine, episode 3, 4, and 5 were shit, but then it ended brilliantly, there would be enough chatter and enough people online sort of talking to each other saying, no, listen, go back, just get through the first few episodes. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like the metrics for a show that's full season dropped in one go by Netflix, got a bunch of promotion behind it, you sort of can't get a fairer trial than that, can you? I mean, it's a shame. I'm with you, B. I feel like we didn't get to see the whole thing. And actually, Jupiter's Rising. Sorry, was it Jupiter Ascending? Jupiter Rising? What was it called now? What was the other show called?
Jupiter's Legacy.
Beg your pardon. Jupiter's Legacy was another one where, you know, I could see why that show wasn't working for me. I could just feel, you know, it was a slog to kind of get through. And so I feel like these shows had a fair go. Do you know what I mean? They just weren't done right.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an element of both of them landed at a great time to test this as well, because everyone's so desperate for something new to watch at the moment, especially over the last 2 years now.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger King found its audience. Bridgerton found its audience. Lock and Key obviously found its audience. There's
weird. Lock and Key is way worse than Cowboy Bebop.
What?
That one.
No,
like Aquaman made more money than, you know, but stuff is weird. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying I understand. I could propose a better metric, but yeah, I don't know.
But that's the Netflix model, isn't it? They are very much algorithm led, to the fact that, you know, they have algorithms as to their film writing. And Red Notice feels very much like an algorithm written film. Because it's got all of the bits that you'd expect, including, like, you know, the homages to Indiana Jones and everything, but somehow kind of still feels soulless.
It's the new written by committee, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's written by algorithm. It is just, right, you know, we know what The Rock does. We know what Ryan Reynolds does. Get them to do their thing because that's a bankable thing.
Here's the beats of the story that people seem to enjoy, according to what we've fleshed out from their watchings.
All these sort of, you know, old school big name directors coming out having a bash at the Marvel movies and, you know, the popcorn, you know, all that kind of stuff. I feel like, you know, your ire is focused the wrong way, man. You know, I get that you don't get it. I get that you don't understand. You know, you don't see the overarching story that's building there. Fair enough. But these kind of one-off Netflix-y films, especially the Netflix ones, really, you know, they really are just, there is no storytelling. That is just hitting beats, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, I suppose there's a logic of, is that that different to what Hollywood's been doing for years? So,
yeah. It's just that it's making more money now. That's what it is, yeah. Right? It's frustrating people. That's what it is.
I mean, it's just using computers to come up with you know what we think people want, rather than you know test footage and everything else. Scott Derrickson, the director of is Scott Derrickson the director of Doctor Strange? Doesn't feel quite right as I say it.
Doctor Strange 2?
No, Doctor Strange 1.
Scott Derrickson, yeah, he directed Doctor Strange.
Yeah. So he tweeted a little while ago that he was approached to see if he could do rewrites on Dracula 2000. And he was told that, you know, it was a horrendous film. It was absolutely horrible. And he asked the studio exec, you know, if it's so horrible, why progress with it at all? Yeah. And the answer is because it's called Dracula 2000.
Yeah. I'm tired of this motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can kind of see it, can't you? You can. You, I mean, it is, you know, the magic that is.
Yeah. I was the perfect age to be the perfect chump for that movie as well. So I was about 16 when that film came out. And I was like, oh my God, and Seven of Ryan is in it. And oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I've fallen for many of the Dracula films. I've even tried to watch the Dracula Immortal one with Luke Evans.
I quite like that.
Oh my God, it's awful.
It was all right. I thought Luke Evans was quite good in it.
It's painful.
I thought it was all right.
I felt jealous of the armies that were slaughtered in the first few minutes because at least their pain was done. Mine had to progress for another 2 hours. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know what next is kind of the next big. We can pick this up and like shape it off and start again. IP.
I mean, you know, Bebop touching on anime is interesting. I wonder if you know people are going to look at things like Attack on Titan now and say, hey, we can do it better than Bebop did, but we'll take lessons from that. But you know. There is some interest.
Yeah.
Because that's a world that's really untouched by, you know, by the live action remakes. I mean, no, it's not. They've made really, really bad versions of everything.
Yeah, I mean, has any of them been successful, really? Any of the live action remakes of an anime?
No. And you know, I've said from the start, you know, I think anime is something intentionally that can't be successful in live action. A cartoon is just like, you know, generally drawn to look like people, and anime is actively not the movements, all of that stuff. And there was this thing around, you know, don't remake good things. Only remake bad movies and bad stories, you know, because you can do it better. Don't do something that was done really well.
But the problem with that...
Go on, sorry.
I was going to say, the problem with that, though, is that they don't have the baked-in fan base that was going to come and watch it. If it was so dire the first time, no one's clamouring for another hit of. Whereas if you've got people who've loved Ghostbusters for, you know, 35 years, they're going to turn up for another Ghostbusters, whether they think it's good or not.
There's also some shows, I think, especially with anime, that are popular almost like almost despite themselves. So like Evangelion, for example, right? You know, that, so there's a big part of it which is, you know, just fucking cool robots fighting like alien monsters and really cool designs and stuff like that. And then this part, you know, the whole thing with dealing with like the depression and the children and you know, the creator really was depressed as he was writing it and explored his own feelings and stuff like that. And some of that stuff is really hard to take. And some people are fans of that stuff and some people just sort of, I'm trying to get through that to get to the bit I like. It's like watching a show that today is quite problematic, but there are really cool bits in it. And maybe that's what you've got an opportunity to do. You've got an opportunity to modernize, tidy it up, give people the cool bits they want without the really uncomfortable scenes that anime sort of forces you to go through sometimes.
Yeah. And it's whether that leaves
the age of the characters a little bit. That'll be enough.
Exactly. Oh, look, they're wearing clothes.
Although, arguably, that's what Cowboy Bebop did. They dressed Faye in actual clothes, made them all about 10 years older, and suddenly it didn't work.
I mean, my issues with Faye casting weren't her outfit. But no, exactly. And you know, I'm thinking about, you know, the some of the animes that I like, trying to work out whether they'd work. And things like My Hero Academia, for instance, is so cliche on kind of almost like parodies itself in some of it, you know, on these ridiculous superhero outfits that really just aren't practical in various ways. So yeah, I think it's a weird one to kind of watch through. But yes, we have computers writing our TV, it seems, or writing our films at the very least and deciding how the TV works. And we have them being part of the next part of storytelling as well, with the computer game releases showing just how immersive our experiences can be. New trailers dropped for, a gameplay trailer dropped for Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League. And we also saw a teaser trailer for Wonder Woman, as well as an incredibly beautiful cinematic trailer for Star Wars Eclipse. Shall we start with Justice League, or Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League? So we'd seen some cinematic trailers on this before. This is the gameplay trailer. Gameplay looks to me, in my uneducated view, because I've never played Fortnite, but it looks very Fortnite-y in its first person slash third person shoot 'em, hook and fly kind of craziness. B, what did you think of the Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League?
Looked really cool, I thought. Gameplay looked quite sharp. I get what you mean about the Fortnite look of it, and I think that's going to appeal to a lot of people. But certainly, I thought. Go on. Hello?
Who's talking again? What was it dead air for? Go on, B, carry on.
Pausing again.
No. I thought the gameplay looked really cool. I thought the interaction between all the characters was quite comedic, interesting. Colours looked sharp. Looked really good.
Yeah, I was going to say it's it feels the right style gameplay for that style game. You know, it's the Suicide Squad, so that kind of slightly chaotic, crazy, you know, very kind of I can't remember the word I'm trying to use here, but you know, that kind of energetic style. I think fits. T, what did you think?
Yeah, I found it quite hard. It is chaotic. Chaotic is the word. And maybe I'm just not used to so much going on at a screen at once. And I'm just like, I can't follow anything. What the fuck is this? So it is a first person game, but sort of over the shoulder of the character, right?
Yeah.
It's not quite a third person game, really. But you get to see the character a bit. Which I mean, I'm not a huge fan of FPS, I think, so I like to be able to see my character, but it doesn't feel like platformy in that way. What did feel strange is like the way everyone moved, the way the screen, you know, it didn't feel like a person walking or running, and you know, the way they would, even like Captain Boomerang was like jumping off and running and all this kind of stuff. So it didn't feel like quite immersive that you were there, that each character moves in a different way or whatever. I know they've got different special moves and stuff like that. But you know, like usually in a superhero game, you know, you'll get Harley Quinn, and actually her bit is she's going to jump really well and bounce and do the platformy bits, and then you'd get Captain Boomerang, and with him it's the melee weapons and the what do you call it, the distance weapons, that kind of stuff. It didn't really feel like that. It almost, again, this is just from me not understanding a trailer, but it just felt like, you know, a massive shoot 'em up.
I think you're describing DC Supervillain Lego, which is available free this month on PlayStation Plus.
That sounds fun to me. So yeah, this is probably not for me. The game, the story beats in it looked fun. It looks like a laugh. I mean, I can also feel like I'm obviously not the audience for this game. I don't think I would understand this game or how to play it or anything. There's too much going on. It's too chaotic. But fine, you know, if this makes the Fortnite fans like Suicide Squad, great.
So what about the game that might be a little bit more for you? Star Wars Eclipse got a cinematic trailer.
So can we do Wonder Woman first and then Star Wars?
I didn't get any of that.
Oh, sorry. From the 90s, I'm just saying. Can we talk Wonder Woman first and then Star Wars?
No, it's 1984, not 90s.
Are you going to try and change history by changing the prequels?
No, so it's just... was Wonder Woman also supposedly... like? Was it a cinematic trailer? What was that called?
Yes.
I think it was just a reveal, wasn't it, of costume.
Because neither showed any gameplay, but one just gave me the world, and it was immersive, and... I just felt like, and this is Star Wars, it's a world we already know, but even if this was just a completely new game, it would be, you know, I'm just excited to play in that sandbox, in that world, that's really cool. The other one was just like what the character looks like, you know. So yeah, Star Wars looks amazing. I'm not sure I really picked up which era it's set in or anything like that. It's
High
just,
Republic.
I think I messaged you guys. Ah, okay. It just felt like, you know... What aspects of Star Wars do you like? Yes. There you go. You've got it. It's literally everything that you want from Star Wars in there. Very, very cool stuff.
B?
Yeah. I thought Trader was awesome. It felt very much like a movie. I think I've seen movies which were worse than that in terms of special effects and so forth. I certainly spent a shed load of money on it. The feel of it, the sound of it was so cool. Yeah, it certainly whetted my appetite. Certainly did what it was trying to do, as far as I was concerned. Interesting to see what the gameplay will eventually look like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the old Knights of the Old Republic style games, so I'm hoping for a little bit more kind of choose your adventure than something like Jedi Fallen Order.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the last one that came out? Which I enjoyed, but you know, that whole kind of like, you know, there's no choice. There's, you know, this is on. I'm hoping for a little bit more kind of branching decision trees and things like that. But no, it looked really, really good. Beautiful, beautiful trailer. And one that really kind of showed up a lot of what we could potentially see.
Is this going to link into any sort of potential new projects in the pipeline in terms of the cinema?
I mean, this is their new era that they're playing with. So this is the High Republic era. So it's about 200 years, the prequels. And it's kind of the Jedi's at the height of their power. It's the, still adventurers and still, trying to kind of map the planets of the Outer Rim. The Sith are nowhere in sight and completely hidden. Kind of like the golden age of Jedi kind of thing. And this is the one we seem to be kind of having so we've got the comic that's tied into this. There's a book series that's tied into this. Leslie Headland, was it? From Russian Doll. This is the era that her film Acolyte is meant to be based in. So, this is where they're going for a while, it seems. It looks like they want to go back to tell some, Jedi adventure stories, basically. So how it ties into any canon we're aware of, we wait and see. Although it did look like a certain little green Dagobah resident was in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there any timeline on this at all?
No, not that I've seen.
So it could be 2023.
Could be 2025.
Bloody hell.
Could be a long time ago. Galaxy far, far away.
Like this phone call.
Long distance.
But it does look quite huge. It does look quite expansive and massive. Titanic, you could say. As we're on the subject of Titans.
Oh my god.
What a link.
What?
That's a 9. 9.5.
Even in the 90s, that was old.
Calling me from 30 years ago to complain about my links. Titan Series 3 has dropped onto Netflix. I think we're at different points of the episodes, so we'll keep it low into the how the story progresses and any spoilers. B, how are you finding Titan Series 3?
Holy shit. It's dark. Dark, but wonderfully dark. It literally just picks off from Season 2. Absolutely fantastic. Not going to lie, I binged it all in one day.
Well done.
It's awesome. It does not disappoint.
T, how are you finding it?
So I think I'm an episode or two in. Can't quite remember, but Jay, you messaged us when you started watching it, and you said something like 5 minutes in, I remember why I love this show. And that was so true, right? It was just so well done. You know, I always think this thing about, with this superhero stuff, I feel like, mind the comics, the best stories are there, do what the X-Men comic, X-Men animated series did, that kind of stuff. And then sometimes I feel like, I can't watch fucking Uncle Ben die again and all that stuff as well. So as soon as it sort of started and it was like, okay, we're doing Death in the Family,
Death in the Family.
Are we going to is this going to be a season long arc and we're going to get to that and then we're going to see, you know, the return, and that's how I started. And then it was just like, bang, no, we're just going to do it in episode one. Boom. You got it, mate. Don't worry about it. We can mine it. We'll do it fast. We'll, you know, and it's in that kind of frenetic Titan style. It is just, you know, quick, boom, boom, boom. All these stories are there. We're going to use them. We're going to play it. So I just thought it was really, really well done. And then ending with, is it Night's Quest, Nightfall? Oh, God, what was the one where I can't remember. But anyway, you know, that surprise Nightfall. Sort of end was a Nightfall, yeah. It wasn't Nightfall. It was, anyway, it doesn't matter. That era, just ending with that, such a big thing at the end. I really loved it. You know, I go back and forth on Titans. I enjoy it. And sometimes I think I enjoy it, but it's not really a good show. It's just Batman. It's just comics, but a bit swearier. And then, you know, like this episode happened, I think it's just a fucking masterclass. It's great. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. It does. It kind of, it grabs you very early on.
Night's End. I was saying, that's what I was trying to say. Night's End.
Oh, okay. I was speaking to B earlier, and I was saying that, you know, the first episode, and I kind of thought, well, you know, if this was a weekly drop, then, you know, it would have done enough. It's got enough, yeah. Oh my God, to, you know, keep me hanging on. But, you know, that would have been good. In the middle of it, there's quite a twist, an explosive twist in one of them. And at that point, I'm kind of sitting there going, thank God that these are all bingeable, so I don't have to wait a week to find out what happens next on it. A really incredibly... I similarly was worried when I saw kind of the first episode and how quickly it was moving through the story. I was similarly worried in regards to, well, you know, slow down. Do we have to go this fast on everything? Especially as, you know, the reveal of, you know, Red Hood and blah, blah, blah is really, really quick. And yeah, you know, they obviously have just taken the logic of, we're not trying to sit up to fool anyone here. You know, our audience are people who have read these comics for years. They know where we're going with this. So let's just get to it. Just hard to catch your breath at points with everything that it's got going on.
Excellent stuff. You know, so this isn't a Netflix show, is it? We're just watching it on Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's one of those. Okay.
Is it an HBO Max one?
It does feel like an HBO Max one. A little sweary.
Does he not come up with Netflix original?
Don't they do that on everything?
Because
I think season 2 was out before we got it in Netflix.
No, you're right about that. Yeah.
No, it is HBO Max.
Yeah.
Well, the fourth season has been announced. This is, you know, this is still Berlanti, isn't it? It's not Berlantiverse, but he's one of the creators of it, isn't he?
Yeah. And you can kind of see that Berlanti-esque touch on it, but it's kind of a far darker.
Yeah, yeah.
And stronger.
Yeah.
Series.
No, it's excellent stuff. It's going to be a slowish watch for me, because that's another one that unfortunately has become an us show and not a me go away and binge it on my own show. But that's fine. I quite like having a chance to talk about these things between.
Yes, I think that's fair. I think it's got enough to keep people hooked, even if you aren't just there for the comic background of it. So I can understand it being a shared viewing rather than a single. But yeah, we wait with bated breath for season four, and whoever that may bring. What we've not had to wait for was episode four of Hawkeye, which is now in the books. So we have seen episode three and four since speaking to you last. So what we will do is we will discuss our recommendations. And then once that is safely out the way, if you have not caught up with Hawkeye, then we will bid you goodbye whilst we have a chat about all things in episode three and four. So before we get to that, let's do our recommendations. So T, what would you like to recommend this week?
So because we were talking about Titans, I would like to recommend not Titans, but funny enough, the Outsiders comic. So a little bit of context, very quickly. The Outsiders was a team that was, I think it started as Batman and the Outsiders, just, and Batman was just there to kind of give it a bit of popularity. So it was like, you know, you've got the Justice League, but separately you've got this other team that Batman kind of heads up, whatever. That was fine. That was sort of back in the 70s. And then in the 90s, or, you know, where I am right now, or I think it was early 2000s, actually, the Titans kind of graduated. So there was this big comic. So you had the Justice League, and Justice League were these absolute top dog guys, and they all had their kind of new sidekick. So Batman had Tim Drake instead of Dick Grayson. So you had all these older Titans, and they kind of graduated, and Dick Grayson formed a new team called the Outsiders. And a lot of them were the original Teen Titans. So you still had Roy Harper Speedy, who is now going by Arsenal. You still had Starfire. Beast Boy stayed in the Titans. They sort of de-aged him a little bit. But yeah, you know, it was kind of the slightly more grown-up Titans. And it's a lot like this show is. Actually, it's makes a lot of fun of itself. You know, it's all a big sort of joke. They're all like shagging each other constantly, and they're sort of walking in, and there's awkward like humor around that. And it's still the same sort of superhero team stuff, but it's the stuff that I like, which is, you know, people just kind of having a laugh about it. So there's lots of them just hanging around their base or their, you know, what do you call it? Ship and things like that, and it's just kind of figuring out how to be these new adults who are sort of breaking out on their own, kind of, and sort of being mentors to the new Teen Titans and all this kind of stuff. I think I recommended Geoff Johns' Teen Titans before, so those two books sort of ran concurrently. Young Justice graduated into the Teen Titans, and the existing Titans graduated into the Outsiders. So the things you could read together. But the Outsiders alone, I think probably the first two or three trades, definitely worth a read. Really fun stuff.
After talking about them having all each having sex with each other, and then saying about, you know, exactly what I like, I thought you were going to say group sex. You were taking from it.
That's why I read the boys.
B, what about you?
Well, as T just mentioned, the Titans, I'd like to go one better and recommend the Titans, all of them. Season one, season two, season three, and even the purple one, the mad one, you know, the one with the glove and all that. Sorry, Gauntlet. So if you guys haven't seen any of the Titans, it is definitely a must watch. If you ever watched The Boys and enjoyed that, you're going to love Titans. It is such a good watch. It's well written. The characters are great. It's acted brilliantly. You know, it's full of darkness, which I so love. It's in many respects is true to a lot of character things. I know we just talked off air about Batman, etc. And he does make an appearance in this. Sorry, spoilers.
Well, Bruce Wayne does.
Yeah, this is, well, not technically. Technically, there is a few scenes. I don't know if you recall season one.
Yeah.
So give it a watch. It is brilliant. That's my recommendation this week.
So just to kind of put a little bit more onto that, the conversation we were having about Bruce Wayne was, my view on this is, if you like Batman and Bruce Wayne, you might struggle with this show ever so slightly, because in this show, it is made very, very clear that Bruce Wayne and Batman is a prick. And
indeed,
you know, they just completely own the fact that he is the biggest dick going, even bigger than Grayson himself. And it's all about, you know, people trying to get out of the shadow of the bat. And you know, how do you become something more than the sidekick?
Indeed, but it's certainly an interesting take.
I feel that as we are talking about young DC super teams, I should continue the trend. However, after the darkness of Titans, I'm going to go a little bit more of a brighter way. Stargirl Series 3 is available on Amazon to watch. Summer School has dropped. Oh, God, is it Series 3 or is it Series 2? It might actually be Series 2. No, it's Series 3.
It's 3, yeah.
And, it still has tries to be a little bit more kind of dark this season than some of the other ones. But it's still very popcorn-y compared to the likes of Titans and The Outsiders. But it's you know, a very good incarnation of some very C and D list superheroes in a high school-y style way. Eclipso is the big bad of Series 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got all of the beautiful characters that you can imagine, like, you know, Hourman and Wild to Midnight and all of them in there for the Justice Society of America. It's just a really fun little watch. Again, you know, kids trying to grow up and be superheroes, but done with a little bit more kind of a wholesomeness than you might see in some of the others.
You know, I love the Hourman concept. Like, well, not the pill addiction bit, but, you know, the idea of, like, you get 1 hour of power. And it's, you know, it's more than enough time to fight a bit of crime or whatever, you know. What else are you doing for more than an hour? I'd love to think about, you know, what does he then do for the remaining 46 minutes after he's caught the baddie?
Throws cars around, yeah. Mainly. Excellent. Let us finish this week then, as we currently are, by talking about a different superhero. Hawkeye, episodes 3 and 4 have dropped since our last conversation. Episode 3, we were introduced to Maya and her relationship with the tracksuit mafia, and why she has such an issue with Ronan. Episode 4 continued that story with Clint trying to get one particular thing that may have survived the Avengers compound being destroyed, which is a Rolex with an inscription on it. And whilst Kate Bishop is in Maya's flat trying to rescue that and gets jumped by Maya, on the rooftop, Clint gets attacked by someone. And it turns out it's the Black Widow. T, how are you finding Hawkeye so far?
I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. Yeah, the delineation between episodes is kind of falling apart to me. So it, you know, it just feels like different parts of one big story, and it's kind of continuing. It's not so much, you know, with WandaVision, they were all very discrete episodes. It was the 60s, the 70s, and even with Loki, they were significantly different. So even now, I'm struggling to remember which bits were episode 3 and which bits were episode 4, or even which were 1 and 2, which bits have we already talked about. But that's not, you know, to say anything bad about the show. I'm just really enjoying it. I'm loving the dynamic. So a lot of my praise for it would be the same, or a repetition of the praise that I did, you know, 2 weeks ago. You know, I love the way they are with each other. I love the family dynamic. I love, this is the best we've seen Clint. I think the whole aloof thing has worked for him. But now having it being called out and stuff like that is great. It's just fun. You know, it's another one of these where I feel like, oh God, I know it's only got, you know, a handful of episodes left. And I want this to be a 26 episode full season of TV, because this is really, really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. B, how are you finding it?
Quite simply, the best Disney Plus show to date. I'm loving it.
More than Loki?
I'm loving it. Yeah.
Wow.
To be honest, I didn't have much of expectations for this show, and I think that helped. I think it's brilliant. I think there's probably a few more surprises to come out. I mean, who is Clint Barton's wife, for a start? She knows German really well, and she was able to find out quite a bit of information at the drop of a hat. So I think there's something going on there. Who is the bad? Is it Kate Bishop's mum? Is there someone above Kate Bishop? How does the swordsman fit? It's so many questions. It's quite really well done. And it's got that element of comedy in it, which I like. It's not too much. It's just about right.
And then obviously the last big question is the uncle.
Mm. Who is the uncle?
We saw in episode 3 very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is obviously a comic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Echo all along. And is that, you know, are we going to see who really runs the crime families of New York?
You know, if this is the way to bring him in, it would be amazing. You know, it would be earned. It would be coming on the back of something really strong.
We are in the spoiler territory, and all of our listeners who don't want to know about this, even though we've got to say goodbye to them, have gone. Can I just kind of like sneak a theory in?
Mm-hmm.
Go for
it. Not really a theory, I guess, but so we are recording this on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday is when Spider-Man, I almost said Star Wars, Spider-Man No Way Home opens.
Right.
It's also when the next episode of Hawkeye drops, episode 5 of Hawkeye.
Mm.
Are you going to say what I think you're going to say?
There is a rumor that Peter Parker has legal representation in the new Spider-Man film.
Yes.
And the rumor is that it's Matt Murdock.
Specifically that it's Charlie Cox.
The rumor is not only that it's Matt Murdock, but it's Matt Murdock played by Charlie Cox.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetically, on the same day that the world sees Matt Murdock played by Charlie Cox in Spider-Man, you could have the last scene of Hawkeye being Vincent D'Onofrio returning as Kingpin?
I would save it for a couple of weeks. Because you have a couple of weeks of grace time to watch Spider-Man. And the
They've only got 2 weeks left, though. It's this week and next.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah, I guess fair enough.
Six episodes this week and next. So
D'Onofrio, then, you know, we riot. As great as John Rhys-Davies was and Michael Clarke Duncan was, yeah, that's the only thing that would be mega disappointing if it's not Vincent D'Onofrio. Because I almost feel like I don't want to see it if it's not him.
I can't think why it wouldn't be. And I know that's a really naive thing to say, but I've said it now.
I also want it to not be, you know, some kind of, hey, we've pulled you in from an alternate universe, whatever. The whole thing of Kingpin, Daredevil, is they are just proper grimy street level. You know, that's their story. Their history is New York's history and all that kind of stuff. So for them, it really needs to be, they've always been there. Not some, well, I guess you could have multiverse shenanigans, having timelines crisscrossing and stuff. But I'd be very comfortable these two being either not street the level. Ones we, well, not the street ones levels. We saw in the Netflix. Just,
but the fact that they are so street level that, you know, you're looking up, you're looking to Wakanda, you're looking to, you know,
yeah,
the,
you're
the
never gonna notice them, yeah.
Planets, you're looking at, you know, you don't care what happens in this district in New York. You don't care about, you know, the unions that are skimming off or whatever else, and, you know, the guy that's beating up the muggers. You know, that's not what you're looking at.
Is Hell's Kitchen still a dodgy area? Are there still dodgy areas in Manhattan? Is it all just rich and gentrified?
No, I think there's dodgy areas anywhere if you look hard enough.
Very true.
And, you know, white collar crime.
I mean, I don't live in Manhattan, so I can quite clearly imagine it to be exactly like the comics. And probably be very disappointed when it's just like Starbucks is back to back.
Oh, for the, where am I meant to get mugged and saved?
Exactly. Because the boroughs were sort of discreet before, weren't they? You're walking into Hell's Kitchen and you're moving out of it, and the whole thing was, this is just Hell's Kitchen, right?
And Harlem and the rest, yeah. The Bronx, yeah. Mm-hmm. Queens. Yeah. So we will see. We will see how it plays through. But I love how they're doing Hawkeye at the moment. Completely with you, B, in regards to, you know, who's what role has Clint Barton's wife played previously? Was she linked to S.H.I.E.L.D.? Was she maybe an agent?
What's your theory, B? She a Black Widow? Is she S.H.I.E.L.D.? What is she?
I think she's S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know. I'm not sure where this watch fits in. That's interesting.
The watch has not been mentioned in any other films, right? It was just from episode one,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So, in theory, it's potentially a watch that she gave him, or someone's given her, and then he's kept with him when he's in his Ronin kick.
But then why were the tracksuit mafia after the watch in particular?
Because it gives clues to the identity of, or the family of. Does not explain why it's GPS tagged. If it was just a gift watch, then I don't know why it would be GPS tagged.
You don't GPS tag your Christmas gifts? How do you know? How do you know people receive them?
But we will find out. We will see what comes out in mere hours' time, or probably about 15 minutes after I've finished editing this show. It will be on Disney Plus for us to watch the penultimate Hawkeye and see what happens. And we will talk about that the next time we, well, maybe not be the next time we're with you, because the next time we're with you, we might be talking about something different, yet strangely quite similar. But until then, we will enjoy that and we will come back to you. Continue to look after yourselves and each other's. If you miss us in our 2-week gap, as we are now your favorite fortnightly fan fest, please feel free to go back through the archives and listen to some of our other shows. Listen to T tell us that the Snyder Cut is never, ever going to happen.
Futurist, ladies and gentlemen.
Or any of the other wonderful things. The original Fandome was a great show. But we will be back in a couple of weeks with something new for you. Until then, bye-bye.
Adios.
Cheerio.